Beautiful.
You.
What's going on, Mike?
Back at it. What's happening with you, sir?
Man, hanging out. Happy summer. Happy summer.
Yeah. You just had your kids graduate, man. There's a lot of success stories.
Yeah. No, it was. It's not the best way to start the summer with everything going on in the world. I feel like every time we jump on, there's a new crisis. But the sun is shining.
Yeah.
We're back. We're in the studio. Rafael has done a tremendous job. This is the first.
Wait, hold on. This is the first time in the studio.
Yeah.
Round of applause for that.
Yeah. Wow. Really.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're back. Welcome back, everybody. This is PCWB. I'm your co-host, Saper Vakil.
I'm your co-host, Mike Knight.
Man, we're good to be here. And we're here with our good friend, Samir.
Esteemed colleague.
Samir Abdul. And we have an easy episode today. We're relaxed. Yeah. We're taking in the summer. Mm. We're welcoming Samir to the podcast as a guest. But it's a special guest because he's also coming on as a collaborator. So he's been a friend of the podcast for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm.
So man, welcome, Samir.
Yeah. Thank you. This is the first time in this spot.
You may remember Samir from the intro to the Zaynab Johnson episode. There's about half a second where you see the back of his shoulder.
And which we were having a conflict back and forth about if we should be here or not.
Mike, give the man a proper intro to the guest.
Oh no! Other than that, man, he's my little brother in comedy. He's a phenom. He's a savant when it comes to putting butts in seats. One of the hottest up and coming producers in the city of Chicago. Soon to be known by you, and you all over, because he's unstoppable, man. And he's about to record his very first hour at, help me out again with the venue.
Speakeasy, Rock Island.
Rock Island. What was the date?
This is the 27th of this month.
Yeah, which is crazy because he's been doing comedy for 3.5 weeks and he's already recording an hour special. An hour show. I think that's what we were kind of wanting to get into, like, right away. Crank the mic. Are we coming
beautiful.
In?
Bring it down just a touch.
There we go.
Yeah, a little bit lower. I'm going to have you reach for him. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There we go.
Beautiful.
Yeah. You can go from he's only been in comedy for 3 weeks.
Yeah. So my little brother, been in comedy now for how? When did you start comedy?
I started comedy 2021.
4 years, and you're about to record your first hour.
Yeah. I mean,
that's crazy work.
I think there's a lot happening, so it's very much so material every day. Right, you come up with one material, and then next week some new happen. You're like, God damn it! Now I gotta let's put this in the back burner and come up another one. And so yeah, I think I've also been privileged to see some of the some of the hottest comedians in the scene.
You were on tour. Remind us who you were on tour with.
I was on tour with Larmore Genosity from Zimbabwe, Africa.
And again, you've been doing comedy for 4 weekends, and you're already on tour. And record in an hour.
I've seen a lot of talent in Chicago, and kind of like, you know, comedy is as much as performing is that is observant in what you see. Yeah. Sometimes when you see that, you're like, oh wow, and you see people who are like, if you got the material and very confident about it, and you practice them at mics and whatnot, then it's not that hard to come up with an hour. But I think for me it was like. I think writing is what really if there's anything I'm proud of is writing.
So something I always kind of ask you, and definitely I think the viewers can take something away from it because it's not just comedy based.
Yeah.
You have a knack for putting warm bodies in chairs. Like, what's your secret? Because you have your show at Second City still, yeah?
Yeah.
And you still produce in other venues. I can't remember all of them. You're doing this one in Rock Island. I'm sure it's going to be sold out. What is your key components to getting people to come out and support your show? And that's for anybody that's doing anything, yard sale, selling paintings, whatever. Like, what's your...
That's a... I don't think there's a, I wish there's a recipe, but I don't think there's a recipe for it. What I do know is marketing is a big part of the game, and knowing what you're offering is a big part, right? So like Second City varies from different venues, right? If I'm doing a venue at a cafe, now I gotta know the fan base, what's around the cafe, what attracts that cafe. So then I gotta now tailor my audience towards that to get them in. I think I learned that, but even that, I had to kind of the first show I produced, it was at Red Room, right? I think it was at Red Room. I was talking to you about this before producing the first ever show, and that I had to kind of go do footwork and just trying to get fast flyers, and through that you learn something. And then when the show time starts, I'm like, how many of you guys came through the flyers? How many of you guys I talked to in person? And you, in this room of 40 people, you're like, one person, like, only me. I'm like, okay, great to know. Okay. All the footwork I did not work whatsoever. And then how many of you guys heard the show through something? They're like, oh yeah, Facebook or Instagram, or I just seen you on the website and I came through, right? So people tend to come out based on, like, you got to figure out exactly what location you're doing the show and what is hot around that area. And so with the speakeasy, it's more of a kind of an Iowa-based audience. So it's, and there's like once or twice.
An Iowa-based audience.
Yeah, because in the border between Iowa and Illinois. Rhode Island is Illinois, but it's right in the border. And the is overall, they call it the Quad City. Cities, yeah. And
sounds like a dangerous territory.
It could be.
It
could be. I remember.
You heard rock and was like, all right, I know what to expect.
It could be. Rock Island is essentially the hood of the Quad City.
Okay.
It used to be like we would drive through.
Wait, Quad City. Can you guys break that down? What's the four?
The Quad City would be, I believe, Moline, Rock Island, Davenport, Bettendorf. These four cities.
Bam.
Make up the Quad City.
He's aced the test. That was the America test.
Yeah. That was
you
America.
Can stay. You can stay.
Somebody from the Quad City is gonna watch this and shed a tear. Like, yeah, we made it.
Just keep this video recorded in case I come. Like, hey, I passed the test. Did you see that video?
Can you pass that test? that's a hard test to pass. Man, Samir, I've been a huge fan, just watching you all around, and I want to get into some of your comedy and your process. But can we take a step back and just for the listeners?
Yeah.
So you're from Sudan originally.
Yeah.
You're like 18 years old. How old are you?
Right now I'm 28.
Okay, 28 years old.
Yeah.
Give us a quick bio. Like how old were you when you came from Sudan? Where did you start? Like what's your journey into comedy?
So from Sudan, I'm from actually like even the roughest part of Sudan, Darfur. Right, from Darfur. Then to Sudan, from Darfur, then to Egypt, and I remember like the journey. From Sudan to Egypt, we went through the Nile to get to Egypt. That's a 24-hour trip, right? And I remember in the Nile, we were in the ship, and we're just kind of going to Egypt. I would listen to this comedy disc we have. I don't know if it's still a number. Those little small discs, the score that you put in the radio. We had that, and I put it on, and I would listen to comedy in Arabic. These guys,
comedy in Arabic.
It was. They were good. They're very. I don't know if you Anthony Jeselnik. You guys heard him. Mm-hmm. So the comedy is kind of very styled to that.
Really?
Yeah. Wait, some are dark.
An
some
Arabic
are not.
Version of Anthony Jeselnik.
Oh my
goodness.
And I would listen to. there was a lot of sexist joke, right? And
shocker.
There's a lot. And I would like, I would listen to it, but it never occurred to my head, maybe this is something I would do in the future. Never once. Then fast forward, and then I'm in Egypt.
So how old were you at that point?
At that point, I was 9 years old.
So you're on a journey to Egypt.
I was 9 years old.
With your family, and you're listening to Anthony Jeselnik in Arabic.
In Arabic, yeah. And I'm listening to it. And mind you, we're in the most beautiful place right now. It's like the beautiful ship in the Nile. Everyone's like just looking outside, and I'm downstairs and just listening to the radio the whole time, missing out this great opportunity to like explore this, right? And I'm just like the whole time, and I listen to the radio. And then I went to Cairo. I was there for 4 years, 4 years in Cairo, almost 4 years. And then from there, eventually, America. So I came here around almost 15.
Okay.
On that ballpark.
Gotcha.
And then from there, you know, when you're in the American, as an immigrant, I'm sure you understand when you're here, the American dream, the quickest way for any immigrant to reach success is to have their child become a doctor or engineer, one of those professions. Mm-hmm. It's the quickest way to be like, I made it. Mm-hmm. You know, my son owns the house right there, right? I made it. That's the quickest way. So then as the oldest of my family, as the oldest son, that was the path I went through. And I'm like, I'm gonna go to medical school, be a doctor. And along the way, I discovered comedy.
Mm.
And
I made your parents really proud.
My dad still has no clue, right? But my mom is like, he's not giving up, so I might as well just support him a little bit and see what happens. And you get that every now and then, but yeah, and that's how I came into comedy. And my mom still wishes I've never discovered this. She still wishes like I drop this and go back and be a pediatric. That's her like.
Okay.
Like she still tells me like, I know you want to do this, but at heart,
just have your fun.
But at heart, I know you. You're a pediatric.
Wow.
And like
that's some pressure.
I know
right
your
there.
Quality is that. And I was like, how do you know that? Like God just tells me, and I know you're a pediatric. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, that's not what God is telling me. I don't know what she's telling me. You're pediatric. You're gonna go pursue comedy, but just know you're gonna come back to pediatric.
And your dad thinks you're still studying for the MCAT.
Yeah, my dad thinks this is the longest MCAT I've ever seen. He's been studying for 3 years. When is he gonna go and do this?
It'd be a moment where a lady goes into labor in your crowd, hop off stage and just deliver right there.
I knew it.
He's seen few shorts I would do where I'm just like in my car talking, right? Not even the comedy, not even do stand up, just in my car ranting about something. He sees that, and my dad is like, He comes to me, he's like, what is this? This is like, you're a man. I mean, look at this.
He pulls up your comedy?
He pulls up like the content. I'm in the car talking the reels. And he's like, what is this? This is what you're doing with your time? This is it? He was like, let me tell you something. He's like,
this. But look at the views pop.
Yeah.
Like, I don't this, care. I don't want to view.
I don't want to look at this. I don't want to look at this.
I love that Pakistani Sudanese accent right there.
I only got two accents. I use it for everything.
It mixes up.
Evil Russian and Sudanese Pakistani.
That's phenomenal. So, what? I have a question about the journey and then comedy. So, you know, coming up in Sudan, going to Egypt, is comedy a way? And even like the whole story about being, you know, on the ship and kind of like tuning into the laughter. Do you see it as a way to kind of deal with life's craziness and turbulence and unpredictability? What's the magnetic force that pulls you to comedy?
Yeah, I think it is.
Over the kids, because clearly.
Yeah, I think it is because like you're going to a whole different country, a different culture, different everything, right? Although Egypt has the same language as Sudan, different dialect, but vastly different culture. So as a kid, I think what I discovered was like, maybe subconsciously I did this, where I'm like, I'm using comedy in a way to connect with that, right? And so like, even at a young age, Egypt, like I went to, this is on camera now, so we're gonna have to, this is gonna be out there. Like I remember, I talk about Child Soldier, and I never really discussed this story properly.
Yeah, let's talk about it because I've heard you say this
that happened. Bit. That happened in Cairo. It didn't happen in Sudan. So when you think of Child Soldier, you think of it like, oh yeah, of course it happened in Sudan. I mean, Sudan, South Sudan, all the recipe is there for Child Soldier. Yeah, right. But it happened in Cairo, in Egypt, which is like in Africa. That's the most established, like well more I guess developed city compared to any of the cities in Sudan. So in Cairo, like I remember there's a school that I went to to learn English. And my dad signed me up for that school. Two things. One, that school was also training me to be a soldier, which I think my dad didn't read that. Because when I told him, I was like, hey, I came home with a gun. Hey, like a week. He didn't ask a question.
At what age again?
He didn't ask. I was at this point probably 10.
10 years old.
You do an Instagram reel. It's like, we have to talk. You come home with an AK. He's like, my boy.
Let me see that.
I don't even thought it was a toy gun.
Are they teaching you chemistry? Well, it's good. It's okay. I know.
And what's funny is that like, he didn't for like a week, didn't say anything. My mom didn't know. My dad seen it, didn't say anything. And then a week later, he's like, He's like, why do you have a gun? Right? I was like, they're teaching me to be a soldier. He was like, are you learning English? I was like, yeah, okay, carry on. That was it. That was the story. Nothing else. And I went there for months and months, and I'm like learning English, but I'm also training to be a soldier.
Wow.
And that's where the big comes from. Now, what's even funny is that all the students there were from South Sudan. And different between South Sudan and North Sudan, two separate countries. Used to be one country, but they're separate. South Sudan is where everyone is, where you get the Luwadang, you get all the athletes, just basketball, right? They're all the tall, athletic, and more darker tone. South Sudan is are essentially me, nerdy, Kevin Hart type.
Kevin Hart.
That's where the big come from. That's us, right? North Sudan. So I remember when I went to this this school in Egypt, all the students were South Sudanese. And we were the light skin of that school. Me and my cousin were. So people would look at us, be like, who are these light skin guys? These guys are nothing. And so then we were like, yeah, man, it's rough being light skin out here, you know?
Yeah.
Right? And so for that one brief 2 hour or 6 hours of school, we were the light skin of the whole time. And then we get out of school, then we're in Egypt, and we're all the same shade. To Egyptians.
Isn't that
crazy.
Amazing how just going to a different context.
Yeah.
You all of a sudden, you're either with the group or you're enemies with the group.
Yeah.
Like, that's my experience, you know, like family from Iran and Iranian, like my parents and my uncles and aunts. The worst thing you can call an Iranian, right, is an Arab, right?
Oh.
Because of the whole history. And
Yeah.
But. For those of us who grew up in the U.S., I was only 2.5 years old when we immigrated. Yeah. If I'm in college and I come across a Palestinian, or even today, or a Lebanese, it's immediately like, oh, my brother, you know, because we're all in this Middle East kind of. But then you tell a guy from Iraq, you're Iranian, man. That's fighting words.
Man, interesting.
Yeah, I think interesting.
Yeah, because I think America. That's the beauty. If there's anything about beauty in America, it's like the minorities kind of come together and the differences become very little.
That's right.
Where back home, the small differences become the dividing factors that divide everyone. And hence, most of the conflict, I believe, because of that in Africa, it's the small differences. Like the conflict in Sudan.
But you go there in your comedy, and I've seen you do it.
Yeah.
Can you talk about like the challenge of, like, dealing with audiences? I don't know what your experience is with Chicago audiences with regard to, like, their knowledge of Africa or Sudan. And so how do you craft humor around topics that people don't know shit about?
I feel like the moment because I used to think that. But the moment I think that, I tend to put myself in a box where I'm like, I have to be educational. But then at the same time, I'm not an expert. And, right, but the audience tend to think as soon as you say Sudan, they're like, this guy is African, he knows the whole continent, every single conflict he knows, and on top of that, so I'm gonna, you know, I want him to say factual things while making it funny, right? Some stuff I'm like, hey, I didn't know even that was a country in Africa, I had no idea, right? So I'm like, some areas I have no knowledge whatsoever. But whatever it is I'm talking about, my job is to, like, I'll just make it as absurd as possible. And I will, like I don't know a lot about the conflict in the Middle East between Iran and Israel, right? But sometimes I'll just be like, so it's a long time match we've all been waiting for. Let's just be honest. And I was less, right?
It finally happened. One of the interesting things I've noticed about comedy is it's not completely just you looking for your voice. It's also your voice looking for you.
Yeah.
Like, because there's different styles of comedy. Like, there's a well-known Chicago comedian. We all know him. And one time I was having a conversation with him, and I was like, hey, bro, like, you're hilarious, obviously. Why don't you talk about, like, your life, your family, what you go through, and da-da-da-da. He was like, maybe one day I will, but I don't like doing that. And his comedy is observational comedy. I saw this. Have you ever noticed? Yeah. Ooh, da, 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 da. And some people go up there and they're just pure. This is my family.
Yep.
This is my experience. This is what happened to me today. And it's interesting because you don't
Yeah. A part of that is the stork dropping off the comedy baby to you.
Mm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's just like, oh, this is how I craft my humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, you happen to get involved with your culture and your upbringing and da, da, da.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's other people who have life experiences outside of America that are going to get up there and be like, professional comedian, walk into a bar and punchline. And, you know, it's like, it's odd because you... I don't know how much control you necessarily have over that. I read Kevin Hart's biography, and he actually made the change when he started off in Philly. Craig Robertson started taking him to New York, and he was killing on stage with his jokes, talking about cross-eyed midgets robbing him and this, that, and the third, no offense. And the dude was like, hey, why are you doing that? Like, but Kevin was like, they were laughing. He said, yeah, but they're not ever going to remember you. And so that's when he was like, talk about yourself, your life. And then that's when he made the change to start telling stories about himself and his life. So
It just
made me think of what you were saying, because I don't know. It's like, it feels like we as an audience will put the responsibility on you, especially if the host is like, and in coming from Sudan,
out of Darfur
by way of Egypt, 6'6" out of North Carolina.
And everybody's like,
oh, okay, so this is
going
to be a TED Talk, a hilarious TED Talk. Yeah. Tell me more.
And that's one of my fears also, the TED Talk. Like, I feel like sometimes I get tired, like if I go up and talk about like, hey, I'm from Sudan, and this is that and that, right? Because I'm like, now it's like, they're hearing, here's this guy's story, and then you saw the previous comedian talked about just, like, everyday life stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, things that are relatable to everyone. Now here's me talking about child soldier in Darfur. No one can relate to that, right? And so I'm like, there's a feeling of, like, you want to be relatable to the audience, but just as you said, at the same time, is that it's not about that. It's also, like, what makes the audience remember you, right? So the story you tell. And for me, I just, like, the guy who I tour with, Lormore is hilarious guy, like, amazing, right? Incredible, big, much bigger comedian. But he is
he's out of Chicago.
He's at he'll be here November 30th to do special at the Den Theater. But he's touring all over the country right now, right? But we had this discussion with me and him, where for him, he's like, hey man, for him, he's clear African. He represents Africa. So when he goes up, you know, the clear elephant in the room, his whole hour is talking about Zimbabwe and his nuance learning America, that the whole hour and a half. And the whole hour and a half, he's killing.
Wow.
Like every five minutes, it's like a new, just the best 5 minutes, and then he gives another one, and then gives another one, and the audience is underfoot the whole time.
Wow.
And like, after that is over, you're like, oh, we want more. That's Lormore. But he feels he's limited to talk about that, but he's clear African. People want to hear that. With me, he was telling me, you don't have as thick of an accent as I do, and so now you can actually talk about a lot of Americans' everyday struggle, because you can relate to them. But at the same time, you have to also know that you're African too. So then you gotta talk about your background, your hometown, all that stuff. But you can also relate to the everyday white person who's walking in the street. You can relate to that person because you were here long enough to understand their struggles. So now I have to wrestle with this. But at the end of the day, I've just learned, don't rush it. And it has to be organic.
Yeah.
So every set I do, there's going to be a good chunk where I'll talk about me. There's gonna be a good chunk where I'm talking about, like, just observational comedy of what's happening around it. Like, did you hear what Trump did? Can you believe this guy? That, like, he's.
I love that. I love ICE? That bit about you and your dad.
Yeah. We went and voted for a whole different reasons, right? Like, we had, like, so I can talk about that, and then I can talk about stuff like, yeah, did you hear what, you know?
A lot of hosting, low key. That's the best place to farm new jokes.
Yeah.
Because you're just present in the moment. You're just like, let me just get them going. I don't have to do my set. Yeah, I just thought of this today. Oh, didn't go over. Anyway, coming to the stage. Yeah. Let me invite somebody up here to clean up this mess.
Right
up the bed,
acknowledge the room. Like, hey, I'm not the funniest. The funny guys are coming in the back. Okay, now let me do my five
minutes.
That's
my secret.
That's the good news.
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah. So what's your what I identified another thing I identified with you is that you said you've been doing, so you're 28, you started comedy about 4 years ago. So that's 24. That's early in life, relatively late to start something, you know, like there's UFC fighters that have been practicing kicks and punches since they were 16, and those are usually the ones that make, you know what I mean? And like Dave Chappelle, he's been doing comedy since 17. I know some local cats have been sneaking in and starting their comedy 17, 18. So it's technically late to start, you know, a lifelong journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like this. I started 2 years after, so I didn't start comedy until I was 30. And then Zapare, you just started comedy like 4 days ago.
I'm 41 years going on 42.
So it's one thing that you said that really struck me is that when you were listening, you were on the Now, you were listening to those comics and you were just taking it in.
Yeah.
Obviously it's in your bones, it's in your heart, but you were like, I never thought about like I could actually Yeah. You know, I didn't think that was a thing I could do.
I didn't even know it was a career.
I grew up in a military family, so I never had access to live, but I always listened to comedy. I always respected it. It was always in my bones. But I never thought, like, hey, you could do it. So somebody literally told me one day, hey, why don't you just do it? And I was like, wait, what? That's all?
Yeah.
That journey and starting when you did, there's like no barrier to entry. You're tearing it up in the amount of time that you have. I'm taking my sweet time. How has your journey been? That you have been a public speaking to a captive audience for how long, and now you're making that transition over into comedy. How's that been for you so far?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm just having fun learning from you guys. I mean, this is just another place to, you know, explore my, you know, it's an outlet for me. I'm already a writer. I already teach. You know, so this is just another venue to, you know, to have a little fun, talk a little shit. Sometimes this atmosphere feels a little bit stifling.
Yeah.
I told you this before, Mike, going up on stage at the Red Room, it's like, oh, this is actually, there's actually some true freedom of speech here.
Yeah.
You know, like I was in Berkeley at this place called the Starry Plow just last week. I did an open mic there.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because it was a day before Israel started bombing Iran. Right. And I had a whole joke about how much Israel bombs. I'm not going to go through the whole bit, but I had a, you know, I could talk about that in a way.
I can
experiment with things. Here I do as well.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, it's a little bit more of a,
yeah,
it's a little stuffier. So for me, it's a place to experiment, you know, try out a different part of myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm learning a lot. I don't want to gas this guy up too much, but one thing I just want to, since we have you on the pod, one thing that's very remarkable about you, and I was telling my wife, I was like, man, Samir is like my new friend in Chicago. I'm hanging out with him, going to these open mics. He's 28 years old, and I feel like you have a wisdom to you, you know? And there's something about you, the way you carry yourself, both on stage, but even off stage, that you have a certain mindset that's, you know, that you're definitely, you know, that's above, you're punching above your age for sure. And I see you doing that on stage as well. How do you, like, where does that come from?
That's a good question. Because sometimes you don't, like, I don't even realize that myself, right? What you're seeing. I think what I've wrestled with is, I think comedy is very, for me, I have noticed is very interpersonal thing where you're wrestling with who you are, and that, I think that's the biggest, that's the hardest thing for me in comedy. Not the performance, not the writing, like all that. It's kind of, you're figuring out your identity of who you are, because I still don't know right now too, right? But one thing I've learned is that helped me a lot is hey, I am privileged to do this. Like knowing that, like, hey man, there are thousands of people I could, that I could name that will kill, that are so much funnier and talented than me.
Where? Back home?
Back home, Sudan, back in Africa, right? Back in, you know, even you know, in the Middle East. There are some people who will kill to be in the same position I am right now and will make it in comedy in a year and a half tops, will make it comedy, right? But they don't get a chance to do this. And now I'm here to do this. And I realized that
Oh yeah.
When you're on that stage, it's like that 5 minutes or the 3 minute, whatever time you get, it's the spotlight on you. So this by all could be your last time ever. So treat everything like the last time. That mindset have helped me so much. The moment I realized that is that the pressure is off completely. I'm not thinking about tomorrow or yesterday. I'm in that moment and I'm like, all right, here's what I'm crafting right now. This could go very wrong, but we're gonna talk about the freedom of in this country about women have equal rights, which is beautiful. That's right. And I'm like, all right, and everyone's clapping. I'm like, don't get excited now, right? I applaud America, like, but the thing is, the divorce rate in this country is very, very high. And is the divorce rate in women right correlated? I don't know. You tell me, right? I was like, that's. That bit did not go well. Let's go next one, right? I'm fun with it. You know what I mean?
No.
That's the glasses. We touched on it, I think, when the cameras were off. He takes, this is a skill. This is right up there as far as a skill of being funny as you can have is when it's not going well. How do people react? Yeah. What did I think I touched on it like way back in the day when I was talking to you, because you was like, hey, if you guys want to go out, you was telling your class, like, if you want to go out and interact with the comics, go to a show. I was like, hey, do me a favor. Try and catch somebody after they have a bad set. Because that's the true pearl in the oyster right there. But how people react when it's not going good.
Yeah.
Tells you a lot about it. It's just like anything else. When it hits the fan, that's when you find out who people really are.
Yeah.
And when people can roll with the punches. When
right.
Because if I'm in the audience and you tell a joke and it doesn't work, and you're still cool, calm, and collected and relaxed.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that one didn't work, but apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently, something's on the way. I'll be cool. But if somebody does a joke and it doesn't work and they start imploding, I'm like, oh, I don't want to.
Because it shows that you're desperate for their attention. You want, like, you not, you're not getting it. That's the worst thing you're gonna be in comedy.
Never get back in our good graces.
And you shouldn't be searching for people. You should be comfortable with you. And that's what I think. I don't know if this should be at the end, but I know we did a roast battle, and that's part of the reason why on that stage was like.
Hold on. Set the stage for the listeners who might not even know what a roast is. Like, this is a story that I wanted to be on this episode. So let's take our time with it.
So, I guess a roast battle is essentially in Chicago. They have this roast battle where you get to, you know, select the comedian, go on the stage.
Shout out Chicago roast battle, by the way. They're humongous.
Oh yeah, they're killing it right now, and they have it all over the country, and they're traveling.
Is it always the Zanies, or is it move around?
I think no,
it moves around a little bit, but for the most part, 90% of the time it's at Zanies.
Yeah. I mean, it starts at Lincoln Lodge. They were on fire.
But it's like it's damn near franchised now. Like it's in New York. It's in Austin. It's all over. Like, there's a direct pipeline for the Chicago Comedy Roast Battle. That's that whatever Second City used to be, how it was a direct pipeline to Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
Roast Battle is a direct pipeline to internet, whatever, these days, sure.
And whatever comics, if you're a new comic, the scene or whatever, a roast battle is a quick way for you to kind of get to know the scene and be out there, because that's where everyone's watching the roast, especially comics, you know, so it's a fun time. But like, they'll get like you'll get another comedian, you're going up against, you write five.
How jokes. Early do you know? Do you know the day of?
You pick each other.
Yeah.
Oh, so like some days in advance.
Weeks.
Okay.
Weeks in
advance. So it was you versus you.
Yep.
Who picked who?
I think we just had a chemistry. So they were like,
I think we were at one of the roast battles and we talked about, or we was at a show.
We had a show. We talked about and it was like, it's also the worst matchup could possibly be, right? Because he's just so free on his feet. He just
wakes up and starts roasting people. Whoever he sees.
Yeah.
If it's a Pakistani guy at 7-Eleven or the guy making a sandwich, Subway sandwiches. Yeah.
Like he wrote a joke. He doesn't even need to see he doesn't even need to say his joke. He's like, I'm just waiting for Samir to F up right now and I know what to do. Okay. That's how he goes, right? Meanwhile, I'm like, I got everything prepared. I was like, hopefully I can read this well. Okay. Yes. That's going to be my struggle. Read everything properly. So we go to this roast battle. There's other competitors there, and we go to the green room, and everyone's very tense.
Yeah, right? All the other pairs.
All the other pairs are like tense. And I'm like, what's happening? Me and Mike are just like, yo, what's going on? Oh, something happened? And they're like, no, this is how they are the whole time. I was like, should we be like this? Like, we shouldn't be smiling and hugging right now. We should be at one another's throat.
Well,
like,
that's the other thing, too, is I don't think it was unique to us. Some people that go into the roast battle are friends and comedians,
yep.
and they just go there and break each other's balls, which is what we did. Mm. Like, we were already cool with each other prior to that. We just decided to do it. So it's just a fun, this is the same thing. You could have caught us in any green room or somewhere. We would have been saying the same things to each other, basically. And some people, it's a sport now.
Yeah.
Like, it's a way to get hella views and all this.
Yeah, yeah.
So now people are like, here's a list of other roast bat. I want him. I don't know anything about him. And they go out there. And so, you're right. The green room was a lot of, this is my time to make it. And
it's like, because it can get, as someone, I'm open-minded to comedy. I love seeing it. I'm always out there. I went to one roast. I think you put me onto it at Zany's. Mm. It's the kind of content.
Wait, were you on the roast or were you actually?
No. I just went to watch.
Oh, gotcha,
But it's the kind of content that people in university circles.
Yeah.
People feel this game.
People, it's like clutch your pearls to the next level. I mean, Raphael, the content. And I'm open-minded to stuff, right? I'm open. I could not believe the things that were flying out of these people's mouths. I mean, every transgression, race, gender, body size, how fat, I mean, nothing was off limits.
And
that
was limits. Just the host introing the show.
So that was AKA Chris. So did you guys keep it clean or what? How did you guys, as friends, how did it go?
That's a good question.
I'll tell you. We went out. I don't remember if we was on another show or whatever, but we went out and grabbed like a bite to eat a couple of days before.
Yeah.
Or we might have even been driving around somewhere. We was at a show and we actually just chopped it up. I was like, you know what? We've been cool for a minute. Where are you from? And he was like, yeah. This and that. What about you? I was like, oh, I grew up here, there, da da da. And then we just started talking like we always talk. We hop on the phone once every 3.5 weeks, and we talk for 2 hours. And then he goes, oh, man, hey, you got any shows this weekend? And then he hangs up. But we're just cool like that. We pick up the same conversation every 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And then we just did that. And then we just got on stage and just, I felt like we were having fun. I technically won the battle. He won the crowd, though, because like I said, he has a magical ability that when it's not going well, I think there was a handful of ladies that wanted to put him in his purse and walk out with him that night because he was just like, okay, all right. So you didn't like that one. Okay. All right. They were dying. I'm over there sweating like a Southern Baptist preacher.
He was not sweating. I'll tell you that. Okay. Because I got to know him. More through the lunch we had, and I'm like, after that I was like, huh, I was like, Mike's story is so interesting, like I knew him before, but you know how you know someone, you think you know him, but you don't know him until you actually hear his story of his upbringing and everything. So I got to know him, and I was like, huh, this is interesting. This guy is very fascinating, and I remember I was all right. I think I'm gonna talk about this. I'm gonna write a joke about this. And I remember his significant other also contacted me. He was like, I was like, hey, what do you know about? I was like, tell me something very sensitive about Mike. Right? and then she tells me, like, oh, he hates when we talk about this. I was like, all right, noted. I'll put that down.
So, oh, that's how you.
Yeah,
you did some research.
I did my research, although everything failed because when I went up on the stage and I remember. there was like one good joke I had.
Wow.
So I think for me, it was more of like the. I would say it was more of like the English. I don't even say English, but I was so committed. I'm like, these are good jokes. And I'm like, I'm not worried about the audience. I'm worried about the delivery of this joke. And Mike is just so good. I hit it. Even when the joke goes well, Mike would just rebuttal with something even more, you know, just more even stronger than my actual written joke. And I was like, this is so unfair. I was like, he just comes up with this in the moment. I was like, okay, here's the next one. I hit the next one. Completely failed. And you guys, all right, you guys, did you guys hear what I said? Should I say it again? And I was like, what's going on? At some point, it became me in the audience versus Mike. Right? Every time.
They're trying to help you find something good.
Because I was failing so much.
You became the underdog.
I became the underdog. And then Mike hit a really brutal last joke. That must have been
frustrating for you. Like, this is, I'm better. I'm winning. I'm winning, guys.
Yeah. But he wasn't even stressed. He was just like, I'm just waiting for him. Like, hit me. Give me one more. And then I give him one more. And then Mike would give me a killer rebuttal. I was like, this is so unfair. Until, like, the last two jokes were, like, Mike's last joke and my last joke. And I remember this because Mike hit a really good joke. And everyone's laughing. And I'm like, all right, settle down. All right, calm down. All right, okay, relax. I'm like, relax. I got it. This is the last joke. This is the moment we've all been waiting for. And everyone's like, okay, this Samir might actually.
I remember you were going, all right, hey, this one.
Yep.
This one's going to work. This is going to work. So the audience.
And the room just froze. Like, I think he might got it. I think this is it.
They believed you.
And this by the way, if that joke would have hit, you would have won.
Yeah.
It didn't hit, huh?
It was the worst joke Zayn have ever heard. It was bad. Okay. I told the joke and the audience just froze. What was that? And I was like, I swear to God, I thought that was the joke that's going to hit. That was the best joke I have. And the audience loses it there. And I would never hear the judges react. Every judge is like, Mike won for sure. Yeah. Okay. But Samir, you were the most likable, right? You won our heart.
You won in life. You won the roast.
And I was like,
that's why I say we both won that one because he's right. Every judge, they wanted to get me out the way as fast as possible. Hey, look, I'm giving it to Mike, but let me talk about you for the next 5 minutes.
And I wanted to win. I was like, give me the W right now. I don't want you. Give me the W.
You're right? The people's champ.
Right, let me say this. This is the beginning of many conversations. Right, we're gonna have Samir on here hosting in one of the upcoming episodes. But one thing, this is the perfect kind of note to sort of to close up on, which is like this. Approach that you have, and you as well, Mike, like you guys have, and I've seen both of you a lot of times now, and I love your comedy, and I've seen you both bomb, right? And I think this story actually speaks to that.
Yeah.
Is the comfort level, the open-mindedness, the inclusiveness, the sense of humor, just the kind of the fun, and I think there's a philosophy behind that.
Yeah.
And an approach that you guys both bring, and I'm grateful to have it, because, you know, the last week or two have been so. I'm glad we didn't really get too political on this episode, you know, because it's so much going on. And so it's a nice little respite. Sometimes we've been leaning into it. Sometimes we've been stepping away from it.
Yeah.
But it's a pleasure to kind of be hanging out and having this conversation. And I think this roast story kind of captures the magic. Do you guys want to plug any upcoming shows this summer to kind of close out the episode?
Our Second City. Mm-hmm. Show will be coming back in July. Every Friday will be until end of August. So we'll be kind of back in business with that. That's kind of what I have going on.
How about your socials? You can catch Samir. Follow Samir on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. So on Instagram it would be Laugh with Samir. SAMIR. So Laugh with Samir on Instagram. The same thing. Laugh with Samir on TikTok. And then Laugh with Samir on YouTube as well. And then on Facebook, Kept It Professional, Samir Abdul.
Okay.
There you go. Facebook. Yeah.
How about you, Mike? What's going on this summer?
I host at the Laugh Factory for Comics That Kill. Please come out and support that. I'm doing my first Comedians You Should Know Wednesday coming up. So I think it's going to be after. Okay. I think it's after this airs. So hopefully it went well. And hopefully some of you randomly came out there. Otherwise, man.
Where's that going to be at?
It used to be off of like Wells and something like that. But I want to say they just moved the venue. So I have to double check. Yeah, I might want to because it's right around the corner. But I'm not exactly sure what it is. But if you put in CYSK, if you're in the Chicago comedy scene, that's a pretty well-known thing. So
check you guys out, man. Doing big things. Awesome. Samir, thanks for making time on this. Of course, man. What is it, Saturday today?
It's Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, man. That was good.
This is fun.